You're listening to WBH Radio. I am your host, William Holly.
Good evening.
Thank you for joining me on another episode. That person you heard was one of my nearest and dearest friends, frequent contributor to the podcast, Mr. Fenton Tania Fent.
What's going on? I'm still waiting for my contract.
Man, please. What up, though, son? How you doing?
Can't complain.
It's been a long time since I've seen you. Since the last time I saw you, you added another stamp to your passport, man. Tell the people where you went.
I just came back from Barbados, the beautiful island of Barbados. It was amazing, man.
I'm surprised you came back. I know you want to trade in your hard-bottom shoes for a bunch of flip-flops and some beach shorts.
I barely made it back, actually.
Nah, the streets need you, though, son, so I'm glad that you are back. With Fenton here, one or two things are going to happen. We're either going to have a great episode.
Great episode.
Or we're going to piss each other off, push these mics to the side, and get to scrapping.
We're going to have a great episode.
Either way.
I don't want to embarrass him.
You should be entertained, man. All right. So let's get to it. I am getting ready to take off to go to Germany in a couple of weeks. So I kind of want to do an episode to catch up on a lot of things that I had missed. My schoolwork had me wrapped up, man. Who knew school could be so taxing?
Speaking of school, why are you going to Germany?
All of these years, I've just been skating by, and now school is actually a real deal. Now, ignoring Fenton, as I usually do, I wanted to start with Tiger Woods winning the Masters early this month. He captured the title. He hadn't won that tournament in 14 years, had not won a major in 11 years. So, Fent, I want to know, how did you learn that Tiger had won the Masters, and what was your thoughts when you learned he did?
I learned Tiger won the Masters like pretty much like everyone else, all the alerts on my phone. I don't have social media, so I got a whole bunch of news tickers, and every media market was covering Tiger Woods' win at the Masters, as they should, because, you know, they need eyes on the product. So to talk about Tiger and golf, everybody's going to tune in to look at that.
Well, let's see. How did I learn? So I'm in my crib, right, and I'm watching basketball, and across the bottom of the screen, you know, the ticket said breaking news, but I didn't catch it all. I just saw Tiger Woods, and I got nervous because I thought, dang, maybe Tiger died.
Because God damn,
the likelihood of Tiger dying is more than him winning a freaking Masters, right? But it came back around, and it said, okay, Tiger won the Masters, and initially, a little bit of sadness came over me.
Damn, the man can't celebrate his victory?
Because I knew what was to come, right? All of the bandwagoners were getting ready to come out of the woodwork, man. You know, over the years, he when he was going through his struggles with adultery, when he had his issues with injuries, the folks at the country club, white America, they kind of turned his back on him, talking smack about him, taking shots when he was down on his luck. And all those people were going to come out and say, Tiger, we knew you could do it, man. We love you. And not only that, but Tiger Woods, he was going to eat it all up. He was going to enjoy being back at the good graces of those people. And the other part that made me sad is Black America, the people who have offered unwavering support since he came on the mainstream, they were going to continue to back him, show their support, and Tiger was going to continue to ignore that support. Right? Never once in his career has he spoken to or spoken for Black America.
Why would that surprise you?
And it's just sad that they give that unwavering support, but it's never reciprocated. You see, Tiger Woods had 101 mistresses. Not one of them was a woman of color. He won't marry your women. He won't date your women. He won't even make your women a side piece. Yet you still come out of the woodwork and support the man to no end. And I never understood that, man. See, in my life, I make it a point to never engage in one-sided relationships. If I'm handing over some money, I need to be receiving goods and services in return. Like, you better be giving me a haircut, a dry cleaners, my accountant, like a lap dance, something. If I'm giving over money, right, then there needs to be something in return. My friends, they can call me any time of day. But guess what? When I make that same call, yo, Fenn, I got the podcast going. I need you to pull up.
I'm here.
That needs to be reciprocated. Never once has Tiger, he's ignored you. In fact, I'm going to talk to my man Mark. I got a clip I want to play. This is from 1997 when Tiger Woods was on Oprah's show. And he had just won the Masters. And she asked him about his racial identity. And this was his response.
A little funny thing is, growing up, I came up with this name. I'm a Coblin Asian.
A Coblin Asian.
Caucasian, blue, black, Indian, Asian. Coblin Asian.
That's what you call yourself?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yo, hold on. Marcus, play one more time.
What?
Yo, if you hear the end, the
funny thing is,
if you hear at the end, Oprah's like, yeah. So here we go. One more time, Marcus. Please pull that up, please.
A little funny thing is, growing up, I came up with this name. I'm a Coblin Asian.
A Coblin Asian.
Caucasian, blue, black, Indian, Asian. Coblin Asian.
Oh, stop. Okay, that's okay, okay. Jesus, take the wheel. Marcus, please. what?
I mean, that's why I said, why are you surprised?
Yo, he won't even identify as a black man. Yet we come out of the woodworks and we celebrate these wins, right? I got my own friend, frequent contributor, DA. I'm looking at my WhatsApp and I see his status. And he sends some message to Tiger. Tiger, you the best. Welcome back, King. And I never understood what he did to warrant that love and affection. Why we celebrate his victories as our own. Fenn, help me understand that.
I mean, I guess that speaks to the culture. We celebrate our people. We uplift them. We try to, at least, especially the celebrated ones, the athletes that are in the limelight, are in the public eye. We want those people to do good because it looks good on us. Like, he's doing good, so we're doing good.
No, but he ain't claiming us.
I didn't say he was.
In no way. He won't even call himself a black man. He's a Coblin Asian, right?
Yo, I knew he denounced being black, or he never identified as being black. I'd never heard that term before. I never heard anything like that before in my life.
Yo, and you know what? People try to give Michael Jordan some flack, and they say Tiger Woods is going the Michael Jordan route, being somewhat ambiguous when it comes to race. Now, I must admit, Michael Jordan has towed the racial lines throughout his career, you know, playing it straight down the middle. In fact, a few years ago, he made a donation in the wake of all of the police shootings that were going on in the cities. He made a donation, and he donated some money to the NAACP, but at the same time, he donated some money to a police-led a charity. So it don't get any more playing it down the line than Michael Jordan, right? But I will give Michael Jordan some credit in this regard. He's done some good work to elevate the profile of other individuals, right? So if Mike doesn't want to be the voice, I think he's done a good job of elevating other individuals. I go back to the late 80s Nike campaign. There was a character that was starred alongside Michael Jordan. It was a character called Mars Blackman, right? It came from a movie called She's Gotta Have It. The person who played that character was Spike Lee. He also directed that flick. Now, that was his first flick. Nobody knew who that was. But Michael Jordan gave him that national stage, right? Spike Lee, who went on to direct movies that are part of black culture, a staple in black culture, like Do the Right Thing, Jungle Fever, Malcolm X, and Black Klansman. So even if Mike wasn't the voice, he elevated the platform of somebody else. Michael Jordan gave unbridled media access to one specific person. Who was that, Fenton?
Oh, Ahmad Rashad.
Ahmad Rashad.
Main man, Ahmad.
Ahmad Rashad is somebody who didn't even play in the NBA. He was an NFL player. Michael Jordan gave him all the access throughout his career, right? All exclusives to a brother in the media. Ahmad Rashad somebody who married Black America's TV mom and Felicia Rashad, a.k.a. Claire Huxtable from The Cosby Show. So please don't line up Tiger Woods with Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan, who has given contracts to gentlemen who exemplify Black culture like Carmelo Anthony. So even if Mike wasn't the mouthpiece himself, he raised the platform of other folks. When has Tiger ever done that? Did he bring a freaking black caddy to any of these country clubs?
I don't watch golf.
And I'm going to say this, man, because I really try my best to kind of be informed when I come up here, you know, try to see both sides of the coin. And maybe Tiger Woods really was raised as a Koblen Asian. Right, I know people of mixed race who say, you know, I had a black, white upbringing. Maybe that is the way he was raised. But I found another clip. Tiger Woods.
Yo, going back to the tape is killing everybody lately, man.
Tiger Woods at 14 years old, man. Mark, if you play that clip for me.
Since I'm black, it might be even bigger than Jack Nicklaus. I might be even bigger than him. To the blacks. I may be sort of like a Michael Jordan in basketball or something like that.
So I didn't set that up properly, but we're going to do it right now. Tiger Woods, at 14 years old, he begins that statement with, since I'm black. He ain't say since I was Koblen Asian. So he knew who he was, but he traded you guys in. So Marcus, one more time, play that clip.
Since I'm black, it might be even bigger than Jack Nicklaus. I might be even bigger than him. To the blacks. I may be sort of like a Michael Jordan in basketball or something like that.
So this is Tiger Woods when he was on a climb, 14 years old. He was well aware of who he was racially, right? He got a little money, and now he's a Koblen Asian. And I got one more clip. Tiger Woods know what those blacks face when they walk in those country clubs, right? One more clip. This is the same video shoot. Tiger Woods, 14 years old, talking about what he faced when he goes in these predominantly white country clubs.
Not every day, but every time I go to a major country club, always feel it. You can always sense it. People are always staring at you. What are you doing here? You shouldn't be here. When I go to Texas or Florida, you always feel it because they're saying, why are you here? I'm supposed to be here. And that's probably because that's where all the slavery was. So
Tiger Woods, knowing damn well the struggles of Black America, when he went through those country clubs, he became a Koblen Asian. That's all I got to say, man. I'm done on that piece. I am done with that. Like, I don't understand why we celebrate, man. If it ain't reciprocated, goodbye. You know, and they talk about, it's the one drop rule, right? One of the things I learned in history. The white folks said, Doug, if he got 1 ounce of black in him, he ain't one of us. So why do we just clamor like, yo, bring him over here? Like, they the scraps, right? If Tiger don't want to be recognized as one of us, take his ass on.
Who we trading Tiger for?
Eminem? I don't know.
Get him out of here.
But yo, I wanted to move on real quick. Yo, every now and again, my brother Fenton, he likes to play executive producer for the show.
I try my best, man.
So he sends me some material, some things I should consider. And the other day, I'm walking into a studio, and he sends me an article in the Players Tribune. It's by Kyle Korver of the Utah Jazz. Kyle Korver is a white player, and it's titled Privilege. Now, at the same time he sent it to me, like, he sent it to me without any context, like I'm just supposed to read it. But I saw it was all over PTI. It was all over The Jump. I'm like, oh, snap, let me see what this is about.
The crazy thing is, before I sent you the video, I didn't see any of that. I just saw the article. I was like, oh, this is right up your alley. I just sent it over, so.
let's see what, let me see if I can read this. I'm not going to read this. Kyle Korver, a white player. He had a teammate who was out at a nightclub.
Dabo Sefolosha,
right? He was out at a nightclub, and he had got into an issue with the NYPD. The NYPD ended up breaking Dabo's leg.
And arrested him.
So Kyle Korver, in an article, he talks about when he first learned of the news, his first instinct was, well, why was Thabo out that night?
Not like that. You're taking it out of context.
Oh, now you're going to make me read it.
Why was Thabo out like that, out that late on a night of a back-to-back? They were just playing a game, and they had another game the next day. So
your teammate gets his leg broken by the NYPD, and your first inclination is to ask, why was he out on a back-to-back? That's a privileged stance, right? But Kyle Korver goes on to say he is extremely embarrassed by that reaction. Now that he looks at it, it's cringeworthy. He says he knows that if it was him in that predicament with the NYPD, it probably wouldn't have went that way, right? So in summation, he's becoming more aware of the racial issues in this country, and he's asking people like himself, people of privilege who don't face issues like that, they need to stand up and do a better job of changing the inequality in this country. Now, that was universally applauded. Everybody said, woohoo, Pat, great job by Kyle Korver. But first, Finn, I want to ask you, what was your motivation for sending me that piece?
I thought it was something that you could not relate to, but you can use for content for the show. Like, this is up your alley. Like, the conversation we just had about Tiger Woods and how he shunned away from the black community and he called himself some concoction of different mixed races. And then now we're talking about Kyle Korver and how his teammate and who he considers a good friend of his was hurt and arrested by the NYPD. And his first thoughts were, why was he out late? And he was actually embarrassed and kind of upset with Thabo initially when that he first heard the news. So I'm like, you know what? This is something to talk about. Because even though Kyle Korver is saying the right things and he's saying, oh, yeah, people of privilege, people in his situation should do things to combat the situation that was going on in this country now more than ever because it's so divided.
Right. Now, that's fair. That's fair, right? Again, it got universal applause. It's on SportsCenter. It's on PTI. My question is, why? Like, how? Let me do this. Why is it important for people like Kyle Korver to acknowledge the plight of Black America?
People like Kyle are the reason why the Black community, Black America, is going through the situation.
I'm going to stop you right there. Stop. Okay, you're on that path.
That's the reality of the situation. You can't change that.
My answer to the question. The question is, why is it important for individuals like Kyle Korver to acknowledge the plight of Black America? And my response to that, it is not important at all. We don't need the acknowledgement of individuals like Kyle Korver, especially not in today, 2019, right? I think the power of the Black community is enough to change whatever circumstance they have in this country, right? You don't need acknowledgement from the opposite side, right? I remember when Colin Kaepernick was taking his knee, everybody's like, man, if a white quarterback did it, it'll really help. No, it wouldn't. Don't talk to me about a white quarterback before talking to me about what Cam Newton is doing, right? If Black America decides to stand up and come together, they can change anything in the world. Because look, Kyle Korver got an article on the mainstream acknowledging our plight. But what has that done to change our life? Nothing. He gets a bunch of attaboys and goes back to his privileged life, right? Black America's always waiting for their white knight to come save them. No, we don't need that. If you guys come together, we drive everything in this country. The athletics, the music, the fashion. If you stop allowing outsiders to come in your community and splinter it, we can make this country do whatever we want them to do. Okay? Fenton and I got pretty much the damn same education. We went to the same elementary school, went to the same junior high school, both products of the CUNY system. And, you know, growing up, people would tell you, yo, Martin Luther King was the truth. Malcolm X was the truth. You know, we know the I Have a Dream speech. Like, oh, cool. We know a few lines. But as I got older, I'm like, listen, man, you can't just tell me somebody's cool. I need to go learn for myself. So, you know, I put my head in a few books. But more importantly, I jump on that YouTube and I would listen to their speeches. And the biggest thing that surprised me about their speeches was who their audience was. See, when they in history, they make us believe that, yo, they were talking to the white folks. They were trying. No. What these individuals were doing were talking to their own people first. They were recruiting their own people first. They weren't begging the opposition to do right. If you think your oppressor's going to wake up and do the right thing overnight, well, shit, I got a bridge in Brooklyn I want to sell you. No. Martin Luther King and them were recruiting people by the numbers. Yo, listen. We got to be better fathers, better husbands. We got to do this. We got to keep the black dollar in the community. That's what they were preaching first. And then when they were clicked up, then they went to the opposition in numbers and say, listen, we ain't asking for anything. We taking. That's not happening today, man. We don't have any leaders in the black community because everybody's just on TV begging the white man to do something. Nobody's actually going in the trenches and recruiting their own people and showing up to their opposition in numbers, forcing them to do something. So I cringe every time black folks say, yo, we need white people to help us. We need guys like Kyle Korver. I totally disagree. And I want to ask you, is it okay for me to be a cynic and question the timing of this? Right? Kyle Korver is near the end of his career. And I think this article raises his stock. Hey, man, Kyle Korver's a team guy, man. He could stick around in the league a few more years because of this article. Am I wrong to question that?
Shooters can stay in the league until they want to retire. Reggie can still come in right now and give you 20 minutes. So stop it.
Nah, man. Kyle Korver trying to get him another contract, man.
Look, Bron always looking for somebody to join in.
And I just got to question the time of it. It's safe now, right? The national story is, okay, let's be inclusive. Gays, blacks, minorities, Nike got the... I question the time. It's safe now. This is not as bold as people believe it to be. And I just hate to hear individuals say, yo, we need that white knight. Nah, if we band together, Martin Luther King and them was recruiting their own folks. They was talking to a gymnasium full of their own folks first. Y'all ready? Now let's go to work. Let's go knock on our oppressor's door and get what we want. Let's take what we want. Stop begging. Stop looking for your white knight to come save them.
Moving right along.
Yo, but that was on the Players Tribune. The Players Tribune is a media platform that was created by Derek Jeter. He wanted a place where athletes felt safe, where they could go tell their own story. Now, do you know I got to visit the Players Tribune headquarters recently?
Nah, how was it?
So I got to go up to the Players Tribune. Yo, shout out to the Players Tribune. That was a great article by Kyle Korver, by the way, right?
You wouldn't think so by his response to it.
But no. Hold on. Real talk. So I got a friend of mine who works for the Players Tribune. He is the senior vice president of athlete relations, right? He is responsible for bringing individuals like Kyle Korver in. Okay? He's done a lot of great work there. The Players Tribune has a podcast right now called Knuckleheads. It's by Quentin Richardson and D. Miles. And he played a big role in that. He played a big role in bringing Stevie Franchise in. The piece that he did was one of the best pieces. A gentleman by the name of Chris Bernard, Senior Vice President of Athlete Relations. I met Chris Bernard when I was an intern with the New York Rangers. He was working with the New York Knicks at the time. And I was walking in the hallway. He might have actually been walking with Allen Houston, man. All my New York Knicks fans, 33 plus, know who Allen Houston is. That's the type of time I was on at that facility, man. You never know who would come through. So I'm walking in the hall, minding my business, and Chris goes to me. He said, "Yo, man, like, yo, who are you? You can't be walking around here without saying hello to people." So I'm laughing because I'm like, dog, man, I'm just trying to stay out the way, mind my business. Nah, he like, nah, man, head up, son. Say hello to people around here, man. You belong here, right? And that meant a lot to me because he knew, ain't nobody really in that facility that look like me. If you look like me, either you shooting jump shots or you serving hot dogs, right? There was nobody really on that administrative side. So that meant a lot to me. He was saying, yo, son, you good. You belong here. And after he said that to me, I would always make it a point to go down to his office and check in on him, somebody that would give me the real. You guys know me, man. I think I'm a pretty cool dude. You know what I'm saying? So I ain't really impressed by too many people. My man Chris Bernard, nah.
He that dude?
He a smooth dude, you know what I'm saying? He a smooth brother, man. He had some crazy position with the Knicks. He was like an executive vice president, but he would be on the business side, but he would also be in the basketball side. Like, he might be making marketing decisions, but he would be in the draft room, right? He would do exit interviews. You know, a few years ago, Kristaps Porzingis, he ditched an exit interview with Phil Jackson. If my man Chris was there, that wouldn't happen. They love that dude. So I said, man, yo, Chris, man, I got to come check you out, man. I need to hear something, man. So I went up there. The office was cool, man. I anticipate that's what Google looks like. Like one big open bay, mad computers, right? The executives, they don't have big offices. Like, everybody's right there yelling over screens. Yo, you saw the game last night? Like a real cohesive millennial family type joint. You know what I'm saying?
It's not all what is cracked up to be.
Like, it's cool. Like, it would give somebody like me the heebie-jeebies because everybody was on top of each other. But it was cool. So me and Chris walking around the facility. And I'm like, yo, he's talking about his new career path. Because the Players Tribune actually plucked him from the Knicks because he is somebody that's cool. He is somebody that has those relationships. And I'm just like, man, what's going on? Talk to me. And it's fascinating because he's talking about how he has to continue to grow in his career, how he's trying to reinvent himself. And I'm looking up like, wow, like, I view you as the dude. You talking about the next chapter? You know what I'm saying? Like, it was interesting to hear, but also scary. Like, damn, you the guy. You got to keep going?
Growth and evolution, man.
This shit never ends, son. This shit never end.
Until I'm selling beers on the beach.
So we still talking. And then, you know, the conversation, he turns the conversation on me. He like, yo, man. He like, you Will Holly, son. He was like, you done did it all. You done been behind the velvet rope. You done been in these professional locker rooms. You played, you coached, you went to school, you a vet. He like, yo, you Will Holly, son. And I'm getting hype. I'm like, oh, shit. So I'm like, yo, I am, all right, son. I'm like, yo, I'm like KD, like, oh, snap. Like yo, y'all know who I am.
Now tell him, cut the check, Chris. Cut the
so
check.
So I'm like, yo, Chris, what's next? He's like, yo, Will, you want to know what's next? I'm waiting, son. Like, my son about to give me the keys. I'm like, yo, what's next? It's like, yo, you got to build your social media.
Oh, son. I've been telling him that for years, man. For years.
I'm like, Chris, there's got to be a better way, son.
The whole world's on social media.
Because,
man,
mind you, this is the guy. So I used to hit Chris like, yo, what you do this weekend? He's like, yo, you know, me and Melo is running through the city, doing a bunch of things. He like, what you do, Will? I'm like, yeah, me and fam was in the hood. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
it's chilling.
This is the guy, and he's telling me I got to build my social media too? The dude that knows everybody's industry, he's talking about how his wife is on top of him. You got to build that social media. I'm like, damn, son.
It connects the world, man.
There's no way around it, son. So ever since I had that meeting with him, I've been trying to put a few more clips on Instagram. But another piece he talked to me about, and this is something you always mention, networking. Yo, I swear to God, I don't know what that fucking means.
Doesn't mean much about nothing.
Yo,
man.
To me, networking is, yo, my name is William Holly. Y'all got a check for me? Like, so, Fen, you always tell me, please, help me understand what networking is.
I mean, it's just building relationships. That's all of me. Oh. Connecting the dots, pretty much. I don't know how some people do it. You can walk into a room, shake hands, kiss babies, and you leave with a couple cards, and you're like, all right, this connects with this, and that connects with that. Let me put these things together. Like, I try to facilitate and play the background, you know, and eat off the spoils from the fruit of the other people's hard labor.
But you know what's funny is that many people have credited me with being a good networker.
I can't see it.
They like, yo, Will, you turned a limo ride into a season with the Yankees. You was with the Yankees. You turned that into Aaron Judge, Aaron Hicks on your podcast.
Shout out to Aaron Judge and Aaron Hicks.
I'm like, dog, that just happened, son. Like, I've never left my house with the intention of networking. That sounds like some inauthentic bullshit, son. I don't, like, cocktail party just circling. Hi, I'm William Holly.
I mean, you still, at the basis of it, is building relationships, regardless of if it's
dog,
a business.
Dog, I don't want to, nah. Yo, what up? What up, son? What you got for me? Huh?
Get down or lay down? That's pretty much what you're doing out here?
That's pretty much it, man. That's pretty much it. But that was my visit to the Players Tribune. Shout out to my man Chris Bernard for having me
out
there.
Cut the check.
Soon come. I was looking online and I stumbled across something. April 22nd was the anniversary of Pat Tillman's death. Now, Fent, do you know who Pat Tillman is?
He was the Arizona football Cardinals player that was also, I don't know if he was full-time military or what, but he was killed friendly fire in combat overseas.
Pat Tillman was a man who was playing in the NFL. And after the September 11th attacks, he said, yo, I got to go fight for my country. And it's crazy because the Cardinals, they said they knew something was up because they had a $3.6 million contract on the table. Like, yo, Pat, that's for you. And he was kind of procrastinating. Like, he wouldn't sign it. And then he told them, listen, my country's at war. I need to go play my part. Now, I think that's absolutely phenomenal. Because you guys know me, I've worked in professional locker rooms, and I lament the fact that these athletes are so out of touch with reality. It's sickening, right? But this guy was willing to risk it all, man. He gave up everything.
Not willing to, he did.
He did pay the ultimate price. He went, gave up the riches, left his family to go serve his country. Now, I am a U.S. Army veteran, and this is not a commercial for the United States military. Trust me. No. This is about a principled man who believed in something and was willing to stand up and go after it. There ain't too many individuals like that on this planet, let alone professional sports. You know, every day I watch TV and I cringe at all these politicians. You got people in suit and ties making decisions about a faction of the population that they will never have to come in contact with, about communities they would never have to step foot in. That's scary. Pat Tillman could have stayed on that side forever, man. This was, I think, year 2000. 3.6 million is cool. He was on the upswing. But he said, you know what? Forget that. My country's at war. Instead of staying in the background, I'm going to lead from the front. So he joined the U.S. Army. Not only did he do it, but his younger brother, who was a minor league baseball player in the Cleveland Indians farm system, they both went. Like, yo, we got to do our part. We're not going to just sit back and enjoy the fruits of somebody else's labor. We're not going to just sit back and enjoy the fruits of the labor that was produced by individuals who have no options. Like myself at Camoya McDonald. Nah, we jumping in the trenches. And not only did they join the Army, but they joined one of the most elite forces this country has to offer. And that is the Army Rangers. When Pat Tillman was joining the military, he vowed, I'm not doing any interviews. This ain't a publicity stunt. And that's exactly what happened. So he's in the Army. He deploys overseas to Iraq, and he's killed. Unfortunate, but it happens, right? Posthumously, he's awarded a new rank. He's given a Silver Star, right? He's buried. And then it comes out after that he's buried that he was actually killed by friendly fire. He was killed by U.S. Army soldiers, right? It happens, unfortunately, but it happens. But the problem was that the Army knew it happened that way, and they lied to his family. Right?
That's news to me.
Generals at the top of the Army lied to his family. Right? When he died, they burned his gear trying to cover up the act. So his mom did the digging and everything, and it was just sad that he gave up his life, and the U.S. military couldn't even do right by him. Right? They were so scared because he was a public figure, right? And there are conspiracy theories out there that he was killed intentionally. Now, I don't know that to be true, but that's a conspiracy theory because he was not happy with the war at all.
Most people aren't once they get over there. But if they said they were doing things to cover up his death, I don't know if that's a conspiracy.
Because, listen, he was a high-profile individual. Here you got a football player. You know, America loves the sports. He was writing letters back to his mom like, yo, mom, things ain't what they seem in this Army stuff. I don't know if you remember years ago, there was a blonde-haired, blue-eyed young lady by the name of Jessica Lynch. She was in the Army. She was captured. He helped in the rescue. And he said, listen, man, they built that up to be something different. It wasn't as patriotic a story as people may have believed. And I remember when I got to the Army, people said that Jessica Lynch stuff is fraudulent. They built that up to have a nice story. So that was Pat Tillman. He fought for his country, and they lied. And his family had to fight to get the truth. Now, that story involves two things that are near and dear to my heart, right? Here you have a principled individual who's willing to sacrifice it all and fight for what he believes in. And the second part of that is you could never just run with the word of authority. Right? There's no such institution that's holier than thou. Shit, look at the Catholic Church. Oh, you can't question the priest. We see what they were doing. Well, that's a brigadier general. You can't talk. No, 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 no. We need to see what's under there. All right, so I just want to take a little second. April 22nd, 15 years, man, since he passed. That story's just phenomenal. And a lot of people think that, yo, Pat Tillman was an Army guy who happened to play football. No, no, no. There are individuals like that. They went to the Army college, and then they had a couple of games in the NFL. No, 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 no. This man was a Division I football player, top of the top. He could have lived the rest of his life playing football, talking football, and he would have been squared away. But he said, nah, man, I got to go fight. And I just think that's dope. So I don't know too many individuals in my life like that. But yo, Fenn, you know they have a Pat Tillman Foundation, and they have scholarships for veterans, right?
Cut the check.
So, you know, I'm like, that's all me. So I'm looking at the requirements. Got to be a veteran. Check. That's me. Got to have a certain GPA. That's me.
Woo.
I'm ready, son.
Cut the check.
They got essays. Oh, shit, Fenn. You know they're paying game sick, man. Write an essay. But there's one thing on that thing I could never deliver.
Uh-oh.
You got to have two pictures in your military uniform. Dog, I ain't took not a near picture when I was in the Army, son.
Did it make you take any?
Yeah, but you had to purchase it. I didn't want it, son.
Oh.
I sweep that shit under. It's like it never happened. Nope. I mean, if Applebee's want to give me a 10% discount because I was in the Army, great. But outside of that, I don't be repping that shit, son. So when I saw it, I'm like, damn, that's 50 grand I could have had, son.
Wait, hold on. You better go find the pictures. Sergeant, this is William Holly. Remember me?
I'll go take a picture right now, full beard and everything. But Holly, you look like you're 40 years old in this pic. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was a rough time.
Yeah, I was a big kid. Oh, man. But there we go, man. Fenn, what you got next over there on your phone?
Where we at? Where we at?
Hold on. I know what I want to do. I want to do NBA playoffs. We actually missing some games right now. I want you to tell me, what is the number one storyline coming out of that first round for you?
Well, the thing that people aren't talking about right now is the injury to Boogie Cousins. To me, I feel like that's the biggest thing that happened in the playoffs thus far.
Oh, my God. You would go somewhere where it doesn't matter at all. The Warriors won 3 championships without that boy. Please, I don't want to hear it. Let's go back to Dame Lillard's shot, right? Dame Lillard hit a phenomenal...
Logo Lillard.
A phenomenal series-clinching 3-pointer at the buzzer. Phenomenal shot. Got no issue with it. Paul George. His defense, right? And, you know, small little thing. Who am I?
Where are you going?
But and things like this is why I was able to play, and I'm gonna be able to run circles around these young boys until I die. The clock is winding down. As the clock winds down, the offensive players' options are limiting. Right? So we under 5 seconds. Oh, okay. Damn, he probably can't run a pick and roll now, so that option's eliminated. We under 3 seconds. He can't hit me with a double move. Okay. We under 2 seconds. Under 2 seconds, I'm starting to crowd him.
I mean, he did try to get up there.
I'm starting to crowd. Dog, I could hold him up for 2 seconds. Paul George is still looking over his shoulder like the pick is coming.
He ain't realize he was like, damn near half court. Yo,
I'm like, he's looking over his shoulder like, damn, I can't get beat because Dame Lillard's going to double cross me and get to the rim in 360. With Doug, it's 2 seconds. Yo, 2 seconds, I could hold up Dame Lillard right now. So Paul George continued to back up. No,
he didn't back up. He came up, but he stepped back. There's no defending a step back. There's no defending a fadeaway.
My G, you crowd him under 2 seconds.
Oh, no, he should have.
Okay, thank you. That's all I want to say.
I'm not saying he didn't do it.
Yo, Paul George looking over his shoulder like Damian Lillard got a full shot clock. Dog, it's 2 seconds. Wrap him up. I mean, his options are dwindling. Oh, shit, it's 2 seconds. All he could do is go up. But what do I know? All right? Paul George, have fun. But
have fun fishing.
They trying to kill Russell Westbrook.
I mean, I've heard some stats.
Give me
your stance
on Russell Westbrook.
Russell is a phenomenal athlete. He's a hardcore, stone cold killer on the court, but he's not an efficient player. He's not the best player to have on your team if you want to win a championship. There's no way you could win with him. Two of the best players in the league right now on his team. I mean, they were young, but still, they up 3-1. In the semifinal, no, the Western Conference Finals is taking the L.
Oh, let me say this about Russ.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I didn't know really what to think of Russ, like, early in his career. You know, I was kind of critical, like, dang, you should do better. And then he won the MVP award. And when he won the MVP award,
he shouldn't have won it that year.
He got a letter from Michael Jordan. I'm going to mention Michael Jordan a few times in this episode, so let's play like a drinking game. You take a shot every time you hear Michael Jordan or something. But listen, he got a letter from Michael Jordan. And the letter said, Mike said, I got my first MVP trophy before I got my first ring. Keep going. And I said, wow, son, that's great perspective from Mike. And that made me realize how important it is to be in the right situation. You know, and I went back and read, Michael Jordan was Russell Westbrook before Phil Jackson came to town. He was a mega talent. People questioned if he could ever win the championship. That was the story on Michael Jordan, similar to Westbrook.
This guy serious?
So, in my book, Westbrook gets a pass.
A pass?
Until they put a real leader in front of him. Because listen, as a player, you're responsible for two things. As a player, you're responsible for being a skilled individual. Nobody's going to deny that Russell Westbrook's a skilled player. You're responsible for bringing the heart and the intensity to the court. Nobody is going to question Russell Westbrook's heart. What you need somebody is to help you mold and put all that together. Why else are they paying Billy Donovan $4 million? So listen, Russell Westbrook, all this time, he got skills, he got heart, but they got these rinky-dink leaders in front of him, Scottie Brooks. Scottie Brooks got a $300 million backcourt in Washington, still can't get shit done. Billy Donovan's a college coach. He's never said anything significant since he's been in the NBA. Russell Westbrook is out there trying to figure it out on his own. He didn't have the luxury of getting Phil Jackson to come to town like Mike did. And I would ask you this. Which Hall of Fame guard has won a championship without a Hall of Fame coach? Let's go through it. Michael Jeffrey Jordan, Phil Jackson. Kobe Bean Bryant, Phil Jackson. Isaiah Thomas, Chuck Daly. Joe Dumars, Chuck Daly. Magic Johnson, Pat Riley. Okay, you even look at the great Gary Payton. He had a Hall of Fame career in Seattle with George Karl, never won a championship. He comes to Miami, wins a championship. Under who? Pat Riley.
So what about Flip Saunders, who coached the 04?
Stop, stop. See,
that's a Hall of Fame
uninformed.
Coach?
You're uninformed, because that was my next one. The 04 Pistons, right?
That's a Hall of Flip Saunders.
That was Larry Brown that coached that team.
Sorry, you're right.
Exactly. That was Chauncey Billups.
I'm still going to kill him for Russ. Keep going, man.
Larry Brown, right? So I actually feel sorry for Russell Westbrook because he doesn't have the guidance that he needs, man. People say Kevin Durant had to leave the organization to flourish and win championships. They say James Harden had to leave the organization to win MVPs. The only constant was Russell Westbrook. No. The only constant was that organization, Sam Presti. Russell Westbrook has yet to get a leader that will challenge him. Coaching is a real thing. Leadership is a real thing, right? I remember DA, he asked me one time, he's like, yo, Will, when you do the podcast, how do you decide which stats you want to use and stuff? I say, DA, we watch the game as fans, and it tells us a story, right? If you see the story, you could always go find a story. You could always go find a stat that will support that story, right? What we're watching, the stats are the after effect. It's not the cause. The story, we can always see what the cause is, what's actually taking place, and it's too easy to find a stat that backs it up. So I go to LeBron James. LeBron James was his first stint in Cleveland. He was one of the best players in the league, probably the best player. Yeah, when he was going up against Boston, knocking his head, losing. He was the best player in the league. He had already won an MVP. So he goes to Miami. And he was coached up, right? Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra said, yo, Bron, I know you're great, but we're going to challenge you to be even greater. We're going to challenge you to play from the post. We're going to challenge you to attack the rim more often. So even though LeBron James looked like he was the same player, his skills didn't really change much, he was a better version because they challenged him. They coached him up. And I remember that. That was emphasis for them. So I said, hey, there's got to be a stat to back up that coaching. And I said, you know what? This is just yesterday. I said, they forced LeBron to play in the post, to go to the paint. I said, you know what? I bet you that is the least amount of three-pointers LeBron has taken in his career. Because they was on his ass. Bron, I know you can shoot the three. You like to play out there. Dog, you a force that can't be reckoned with. Get to the paint. So sure enough, I went to check the stats. And outside of LeBron's rookie year, the least amount of threes he's ever taken in his career was those years in Miami. That's coaching, even for great players, even for people at an MVP level. Russell Westbrook has yet to experience for that. And for that, I actually feel sorry for him.
You finished?
Yes. Go for it.
All right, let me start with his first point. I mean, you was on point. You said some things that were interesting.
this motherfucker named a coach who actually wasn't coached.
I was mistaken. I named the wrong coach.
Speaking of that,
Flip Saunders is not a Hall of Fame coach.
Chauncey Billups and Rasheed Wallace, they won a championship in Detroit with a Hall of Fame coach and Larry Brown, right? Larry Brown, who had no problem challenging his team in the media, the way Pat Riley did, the way Phil Jackson did. The best version of Allen Iverson we've ever seen came with who as his coach? The man Allen Iverson swore he hated. Somebody who had no problem standing up to him, challenging him. The one, Mr. Larry Brown. My point exactly. Yo, Russ.
get yourself a Larry Brown, Russ, or you could pay attention to your teammates you have on the floor with you. You said that Russ, you said Russ's problem is he doesn't have the leader, he has the coaching to help mold that force that he is into the better player that he could be. No, Russ's problem is Russ. Russ's problem is that he can't see the talent around him and utilize his skill set.
Stop. Stop.
Go ahead.
Benton, if you're paying these coaches $4 million, for what?
They don't need to get paid that. Yo, for the most part, these coaches aren't doing much.
Stop. If every player knew everything they were supposed to do, there would be no need for that. I told you, a player is responsible for one of two things. Well, for two things, skills and heart. That's it. Russ, keep fighting, brother. But I wanted to move on, man. I wanted to move on.
You saw the L coming, guys.
Listen.
We're going to talk about this after the show. He'll tell you about it in the next podcast.
The other story for me coming out of the first round is these teams that kind of have no business winning, like the little engine that could, but they're doing great things. In the case of the Los Angeles Clippers and the Brooklyn Nets. Now, the Brooklyn Nets were able to steal a game from the Philadelphia 76ers, but that's an organization that's doing some good things, right? I seen the coach make decisions that actually paid dividends for them winning. The Clippers gave the Warriors all they could handle the night before. That series is 3-2. So my question to you, Fent, is, with free agents, you always hear that if you're going to go to New York, man, you got to play in the Mecca. You got to play in Madison Square Garden. If you're going to Los Angeles, you got to play for the premier franchise. That is the Los Angeles Lakers. But nah, what's wrong with playing for the Nets or the Clippers? So, Fenton, in 2019, I'm asking you, what is the major difference between being a Knick and being a Net? Or being a Laker and being a Clipper? Like, what does it mean that these guys are the premier franchise in 2019? It might have meant something back in the 50s when they only had one newspaper reporter to follow the team and he chose the Lakers over the Clippers. But what does that mean today in 2019?
That's old money versus new money. That's the same thing. The Lakers are the establishment. The Clippers are the next best thing in town. Like, you have something that's established already. You can't change. That's already grained into the culture.
With everybody playing on, listen, everybody plays on national TV. The NBA waits for free agency to be done, and then they decide the calendar for the season. Oh, shit, Kevin Durant's in Brooklyn. Guess who's playing Thursday night? I don't know what that means in 2019, where if I finish my game as a Brooklyn Net, I'm going to the same club the Knicks are going. The groupies will be there just the same and waiting for me, right? We all flying on chartered jets. What's the difference? I don't get that narrative anymore. I don't understand it, right? Everything is the same. The Nets just built a beautiful practice facility. They talk about, yo, LeBron, if you go to L.A. or if you Kawhi Leonard, if you go to L.A., you got to play for the Lakers. I don't understand that anymore.
The media is centered on the East Coast. Dame Dillard hit a shot that we all watch in the playoffs because there are only a handful of games in the playoffs. But when's the last time you watched Dame Lillard play in the regular season? 2018-19 season. When's the last time you seen him play?
But he's not a top-tier star. I'm talking about, if Kevin Durant goes to Brooklyn, Brooklyn's on national TV every other Thursday.
Yo, the Golden State Warriors is my favorite thing to watch in sports, period. Ask me how many games I watch. They come on too late.
But they're still on national TV is what I'm saying. They still get the national stage, right? Mm. They still get the Sunday afternoon game. I just want to say that I don't believe that is the thing. It's not 1950 where the newspaper could only afford to cover one team, right? Everybody got a fucking YouTube channel and a social media page. Your stage is the same if you're one of the stars. LeBron James had this NBA hijacked from fucking Cleveland. So y'all can miss me with that narrative. You got to play for the premier franchise. Nah, give me the franchise that got money, got a general manager that's doing the right thing, and a coach. Right? Ask LeBron how that premier franchise is looking right now.
they didn't have the formula that you just laid out.
The Nets came here a few years ago. I got no issue. Let me tell you, when they came here with that Russian billionaire who... He said, listen, I'm making a splash. I'm spending money. He got his Deron Williams. He got his Joe Johnson. Dog. no issues as a fan, right? It just so happened Deron Williams fell off the face of the planet. That's not the owner's fault. From my owner's perspective, he did his job. So that regime, that team was over. He said, listen, I'm going to go for it one more time, but it's going to cost us. Fan base said, all right. He traded the house for Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett.
They had a team. They went to the playoffs.
That shit didn't work. He said, now listen, guys, I told y'all it was going to cost us, right? So we had a couple down years. He cleaned house. He brought in Sean Marks, somebody from the San Antonio Spurs regime. They got a coach that I said, I just seen him making real life X and O's decisions that was paying dividends in that series. And now they back up top. They got a new facility. They got money. Like, yo, I can't see how you don't consider the Nets or the Clippers. Man, Pat Beverly, nigga grabbed 13 rebounds last night from the point guard position. Yo, sign me up next to that pit bull.
And see how much winning they're going to do after they take this L tomorrow night. Have fun going fishing with Pat Beverly.
Yeah, he going. That's all good, man. They maximize their potential, man. But they maximize the potential. LeBron's back home. But listen, so I wanted to do a full podcast today because I am getting ready to take off. I am going to Germany in about 2 weeks or so. I'm going to study abroad with my doctorate program. If you know me, you know I don't like to leave my house and I don't like strangers, right? So this trip is about to be miserable. But what I am excited about is my reading material, son. I picked me up a new book. It's called LeBron Inc. It's by author Brian Windhorst, who has been covering LeBron since he was in middle school. And it is about LeBron and his business dealings. We come up here and we poke fun about LeBron as a basketball player. But when we talking business, that boy good, right?
Trying.
We ain't got no issues, man. And I always wonder, like, yo, where the hell that came from, bro? Honestly, a dude from the inner city. I remember when I went to the Army, I got a $10,000 credit card. I lost my mind. Like, how he's been able to climb through the slums and be on top of his game is impressive, right? So I'm looking forward to that book. Some of the things that I've heard is that LeBron had a sponsorship deal with McDonald's, and he got tired of being a corporate shill. So he said, yo, I'm going to go build my own franchise. That's when he got behind Blaze Pizza. So what he had to do was he had to give money back to McDonald's. He's like, yeah, I'll keep that. I'm going to build my own. So that's just one of the stories that I look forward to reading. And we always hear about LeBron and his aspirations to be an owner. Now that part always gives me pause, because with these guys always talking about building and being a boss, I wonder, why do they stop and settle for just being an owner in somebody else's league? Yo, Fent, why don't they go out there and build something to compete with the NBA and the NFL and the MLB? Like, honestly, why can't you build a league to compete with those monsters?
People do it all the time. How long do they last? XFL, AAFL, whatever that league that just collapsed. Well, the ABA had to merge with the NBA. They saved each other. They needed each other. The D League turned into the G League. The NBA swallowed that up and picked that up. Like, other entities have tried it before, but it's just hard. You need the capital. You need the money. You need the business relationships to get the franchises, to get the marketing, to get the advertising, to pay for your league. No matter how much money LeBron, Melo, D-Wade, like everybody in the league could pull together and build their own league, the only way that's going to work if they take themselves and play in that league. They can't still be on the Lakers and then want to run a league on the side.
Like, listen. I think the answer to that question is simple. Laziness. Right? Is it going to be hard to work to build a league? Of course. But that doesn't mean it can't be done. The owners of these franchises, Jerry Jones, Steve Ballmer, they're just men, right? LeBron James and guys of that ilk, They don't want to go through the hard work of building these leagues. But it can be done, right? I said earlier that we drive everything in this country, right? As a culture, we got the music, we got the talent as far as athletics, we got the fashion. Why can't LeBron have a Cleveland team? Jay-Z got the Brooklyn team. Rick Ross got the Miami team. Dr. Dre got the LA team. Oprah got the Chicago team. It can be done. They just don't want to put the hard work in to be in those marketing meetings, right? To come up with those logos, to work on those sponsorship deals. They rather just take the easy check and be on a beach somewhere, right? And it's frustrating because I really believe they can pull it off. You talked about the AFL, which was a league many, many, many moons ago that rivaled the NFL. They had Joe Namath in the AFL for a while, right? They gave him some money. If LeBron and them put a league together.
You just compare LeBron to Joe Namath. You just put them on the same level.
As far as what?
As far as attributes, as the same type of individual that...
No. I'm talking about Joe Namath as a player. He was a hot commodity. And I'm talking about LeBron and his ilk as owners. Last year, Markelle Fultz, the number one pick in the draft, on a rookie contract, he made $8 million. You mean to tell me LeBron, D-Wade, Hov, Diddy, Will Smith in Philly, Rick Ross, Oprah, you mean to tell me they can't come up with $15 million for Zion Williamson and have him play in their league?
Of course they can.
Stop. Exactly. So it can be done.
So who's Zion going to play against? LeBron is under contract with the Lakers.
Dog, I'm talking about after his career. I'm just talking about anybody with a brain and some money. They can put this together instead of giving away your intellectual property for free. If LeBron, if all the hip-hop artists went to the NFL and the NBA and said, listen, stop playing my music in your arena. We taking it over here. We could build whatever we want. Instead of worrying about, yo, Travis Scott, you shouldn't perform. No. Come perform at our league.
Unfortunately, those men can do that because they do not own their music. The system is set up in a way.
No, stop. Did Nipsey not own his music? I'm talking about plenty of hip-hop artists own their music.
Not many.
How do you know if Travis owns his music or not? See, that's what I hate when you do that, son. You don't know that for
I
fact.
Don't know for
I
fact.
I know you don't, so I don't
wanna
bring it up.
I don't want to hear Travis Scott. I don't want to hear him.
Nigga, that ain't the fucking point. I'm talking about hip-hop as a whole. Hov owns his music. Nipsey owns his music.
That's two individuals. Ross, you named Ross a couple times. Ross don't own his music. He probably just started owning his music.
All right, stop. Stop talking about shit you don't know for a fact.
All right,
thank you. Number one, and that goes to my point again, giving our shit away for free. Stop signing with these record labels. Sell it out your trunk, right? We always want the short and easy paycheck instead of building our own. That's why I love the story of Master P and all these boys that were selling it out their trunk. See, LeBron, I just told you about the book. LeBron, he said he didn't want to be a corporate show. He gave McDonald's back his money. He said, I don't mind going building my own franchise chain in Blaze. Hard work. It can be done with a league. These are just men. And I get frustrated when they stop at, oh, I want to be an owner. LeBron, you're going to be an owner in the same league and sit at the same table with individuals that try to suppress your finances when you were a player? You going to sit in a league and sit at the same table with people that are laughing and snickering at your boy Carmelo Anthony trying to make it out to seem like he ain't shit when he's better at his job than they are at, will be at theirs? Ever? I sit around and I look at Allen Iverson sitting at the Philadelphia's game and all his jury. No power, no influence. Y'all going to continue to be in that league? They stripped your great ones. Ice Cube just built the league. You know who the coaches are? Clyde Drexler, fucking Charles Oakley. Charles Oakley can't even get in Madison Square Garden. And you're going to continue. All it is hard work, fam. That's all it is. And they don't want to partake in that because they want to get to the bag. A whole bunch of strong men that have made their life on building. Why do you stop right there? The XFL is getting ready to reboot again. Fucking Vince McMahon just cashed out $272 million in stock. He's going for it. He ain't playing.
Good luck.
And going back to the NFL, Al Davis, former owner of the Oakland Raiders, he passed away. He was the commissioner of the AFL. He was going at the NFL's neck. I'm coming for you boys. So much so they had to cut him in. So even if LeBron and them built the league just to gain more leverage, even if you built the league to say, you know what, we'll come over there, but make sure these athletes, there's no such thing as a salary cap. Let me tell you some teams that came from the AFL. The Patriots. You ever heard of them? The Buffalo Bills. You can succeed, son. They just don't want to put the legwork in. I'm wilding or not?
You're wilding. 100%.
Of course.
Of course. I just watched the Sam Cooke documentary. Did you see that one?
I did not.
You did not. All right. So Sam Cooke was doing all the things that you were just mentioning. Oh, they own my music? I'm gonna start my own publishing company. Oh, the record labels are robbing me? I'm gonna start my own record label. You know what they did to Sam Cooke? They assassinated Sam Cooke at 33 years old. There's reasons why certain things, I didn't want to take it there, but there's reasons why certain things are the way they are. Listen,
Martin Luther King was assassinated. We're gonna stop fighting for equality. Just because they deter you don't mean you stop.
I didn't say that.
That's exactly what you said.
I'm just telling you there's reasons why things are the way they are. It's not Fenton, that people don't want to go for it.
It's hard work.
That's it.
But if you never challenge them, you're going to be under their thumb forever. I sit back at all these pencil neck motherfuckers in suit and ties laughing and giggling, making fun of Carmelo. Allen Iverson could just hope and pray that he could get in the arena. Charles Oakley getting escorted out after he filled that motherfucking arena night in and night out. That makes me sad, son. And the powers that be, they can do something about it. I was listening to a song today. You know I got to drop a whole verse every fucking episode. My man Hov said, I said no to the Super Bowl. You need me, I don't need you. Every night we in the end zone. Tell the NFL we in stadiums too. So Hov, you got access to this NFL? To these stadiums? Then let's build it. Instead of sitting on the side as an agent and drawing a commission off these athletes from the NFL, breaking up the pot even more. No. You in bed with these brotherfuckers you claim to detest. Take your shit back, son. But everybody want a bag today.
Everybody want a bag.
Nah, I'd rather make fucking $500,000 with my homies and build my own shit than make $5 million with them niggas. But like I said, I was going to Germany for school, right? I'm going to Germany for school, right? So I'm in a doctorate program. And let me tell you something. Academia is the biggest scam in fucking America, son.
One of the many.
I feel filthy being in that motherfucker, son. Like, yo, like, this is what this is? A bunch of doctors doing research. Part of a doctorate program, you have to do research. Now, there's real valuable research in this country. When you go to the doctor and they give you penicillin, that's because somebody went and did research and tested it on some mice and came back and said, yo, this will help humans. But then you got that bullshit research where people want to study the effects of playing Nas's Illmatic for newborn babies. Like, dog, we don't need that, son. Like, yo.
If your baby come out with bars? If your baby come out with bars, though?
Yo, so I'm like, professor, I really got to come up with something? Like, yo, Holly. So with the research, you got to come up with a question and answer it kind of because there's never really an answer. Okay. So, Finn, I got to come up with a question.
What you got?
I'm struggling, son. I'm struggling. But throughout my readings, you know, there was something. There's a lot of things that I had always believed in, but I never had any fancy sayings for it. So I'm like, dang, I'm reading all this doctorate material, and it's things that I believed in. I'm like, damn, I must have been a genius all this time. Shit. Like, I never read the 48 Laws of Power, but every time somebody mentions one, I'm like, oh, shit, I've been practicing that since I was 14. But so there was something called a Stockdale Paradox. I've mentioned it on this podcast before. We're going to do it again. Stockdale Paradox. It's about a U.S. Naval admiral who was captured during Vietnam. He was captured. And they asked him, like, yo, how did you get out? He said, you know what? I always had faith that I would get out of there, but I had to confront the cold, hard facts that I was in captivity every day. So he had to do certain things. He would relay secret messages to his wife through letters. They tried to use him as propaganda. Like, look, your soldiers are doing just fine. He mutilated his body so they couldn't do that, right? So, yes, he has faith that he can go home. But on the flip side of that, he knows, like, yo, I got to address the cold, harsh reality every day. So it's kind of like a duality. Faith, but still somewhat thinking negatively. And I said, wow, like, that's what I've really practiced my whole life, son. Right? Even when we talk about when I was playing basketball, yo, we could win this game, but I always thought negatively, like, damn, if we don't do this, we're going to lose. If I don't get better, they're going to get me. Right? So it was, yes, faith that I'm going to be successful, but somewhat negative thinking, right? So I said, I want to do something around that because I think my hypothesis is that great players, people that maximize their potential, they have a level of self-awareness. It's not just unbridled optimism. Oh, snap, I never thought about losing. No, it's not that. So my research question is based up around that. What level does self-awareness play in an athlete maximizing their potential?
That's a great question. You got an answer for it?
Right. Nah, because again, it's doctor studies. There's never really an answer. So honestly, no, all jokes aside, when I look around, people that I think have maximized their potential in the NBA. Fan, give me an athlete you think maximized their potential.
I mean, the standard is
No. Give me an athlete you believe.
That's my answer. Even though he give is the standard, name. That's Mike. Michael Jordan.
Michael Jordan. No, present day.
Present day. I don't want to say LeBron, but yeah, LeBron.
See, I totally disagree with that. I think LeBron has been a mega talent, but his inability to look in the mirror and be honest about his deficiencies has somewhat dwarfed his career. He should have did a lot more winning. In my opinion, one of the few people in the NBA today that has maximized their potential is the one and only Steph Curry. Here you have a kid who barely had a Division I scholarship, and he worked his way up to be the only unanimous MVP in NBA history, something LeBron has never done, although he should have. Again, that's why I go where people have not maximized his potential. Because to me, I believe, my hypothesis, Steph Curry still thinks he's that kid who didn't get a Division I scholarship. So when he walks in the gym, he doesn't think, yo, I'm the greatest. He thinks, yo, them boys behind me, they gaining on me, so I need to get better. Right? He's self-aware. He understands, damn, I'm 6'3 with ankle injuries. Let me ratchet up this jump shot to another fucking level. Again, faith that he belongs here, but still the duality, the ability to be self-aware, to look in the mirror and be successful, right? And the person who I think symbolizes that the most is, again, the great Michael Jordan, as you mentioned. Michael Jordan, and I got a clip, right? But I'm going to tee it up. Michael Jordan did an interview for his 50th birthday, right? Now, Michael Jordan at 50 years old is somebody that accomplished anything you can ever accomplish in basketball multiple times over, right? At 50 years old, he has all the money he could ever want. He's the man. Nobody would ever question him. But listen to him talk about his struggles against the Detroit Pistons and how he got over it. Because early on in his career, he kept knocking his head against the Pistons. Couldn't beat him. And listen to him explain. This is him explaining at 50. Now, 50 years old, he could have been jaded, out of touch. But listen to how he explains finally getting over that hurdle.
I was beat down because of the physicality of what was happening within the game. You know, and I didn't have it to compete with them. That's when I really started to physically build my body up and gear myself up for that type of beating. From that year on, I got stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger because that became as important as anything else.
Yo, did you hear what I heard? I heard humility. Did you hear what I heard? I heard the greatest player in the world be self-aware and say, yo, flat out, I wasn't ready for that beating. It wasn't, yo, my teammates, yo, Scottie Pippen wasn't good enough. Yo, Phil Jackson wasn't the guy. It wasn't passive aggressivenesses. My coaches ain't ready. It wasn't coming to the press conference with a fucking sling on his hand like LeBron James did. No, it was the greatest of all time saying, flat out, son, I need to get in that gym. Again, the duality. And when Mike struggled to get past the Pistons, he had already been named MVP of the league. He could have got a pass like, yo, you know, man, these dudes just ain't ready. They ain't tough enough. Oh, what did LeBron say a few years ago? Our team is top heavy. Yo, Marcus, if you could play that clip one more time. Listen to what he said. The second line, I wasn't ready.
I was beat down because of the physicality of what was happening within the game. You know, and I didn't have it to compete with them. That's when I really started to physically build my body up and gear myself up for that type of beating. From that year on, I got stronger, 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 stronger because that became as important as anything else.
Yo, fam, what you got? Listen, you can't even get these. You can't even get Ben Simmons to bend his knees on a free throw because he think he know it all. I was looking at Kyle Lowry the other day. He struggles every year in the playoffs, but you can't tell him that. Oh, nah, it's just about making shots. Dog, it's okay to turn around and say, dog, we ain't good enough. I need to get better, right? Because if you have that blind spot, if you don't agree it's a deficiency, how could you ever improve it?
Oof, that's a lot to ingest right there.
And listen, I can point to examples all over sports. You got Tom Brady versus Peyton Manning. Tom Brady is a 6th-round draft pick. Man, he still looks in the mirror and says, yo, I got to get better. You see his documentary recently, he got to change his diet. He got to Tom Brady could have told you motherfuckers, fuck you long time ago, I've got 4 Super Bowls. But that's how your game plateaus. He says, no, constant improvement. Let me look in the mirror and see what my deficiencies are. You know, Michael Jordan, he would get all the credit in the world as being the great. I still think he doesn't get the credit he deserved. Because his first three-peat, he was flying high. He was athletic. But then, of course, Father Time is undefeated. His skills diminished. So what did he do? Honest assessment. Look in the mirror. I need to bulk up. I need to get in the post. And then he ripped off another three-peat. You can't do that without self-awareness. And when I was coaching Brooklyn College, that was one of my greatest frustrations. We were walking the gym and these kids think they had it all figured out because they won yesterday. Dog, how do you ever improve? That effort you did yesterday, you're going to get your ass blasted by John Jay. I don't care if you had 15 points yesterday. Shit, I averaged 20. What does that mean? I'm off the hook for my whole career? Nah, I had 20, guys. I'm good. No, I need 20. Shit, I should have had 20 and 10. At 20 and 10, yo, I need 20 and 10. I need to defend the pick and roll better. Constant improvement, self-evaluation every night. That's how you get to the top. That's how you become Derek Jeter. A-Rod, mega talent, but that nigga got a blind spot. Trust me, I've been in that locker room. Blind spot. That's why he's a career underachiever. Derek Jeter took everything he wanted and more. Tom Brady's still climbing. Peyton Manning, you can't say a word to him. Aaron Rodgers, you can't tell him nothing. They get uncomfortable around the media. They cringing. Tom Brady stand up every day, win, lose, or draw. What up? What you got for me? I remember one time Kobe Bryant said, I don't care what the media say to me. I say worse to myself. So that's the study I want to do.
You got a lot of time and energy on your hands to put that one together.
But yo, listen, I want to test that theory, right? I can't get you Michael Jordan, right? I can't get Aaron Judge today. But who I can get is Kelly George. One of my nearest and dearest friends, Kelly George. Now, life has taken him on a different path. But when he was playing basketball, he was one of the meanest, toughest, dun-dutter.
Kelly should have went to the league.
For his age group, like at all times, monster. He is somebody I believe maximized his potential. And the reason I think he was able to do that, because he could speak honestly about himself and he continued to climb. He wasn't one of these teammates where you had to be careful what you say to him. Nah, you could tap him in the chest. Kels, you got to do better. So I want to see what he thinks about that. You know, I want to see what he believes was the reason, the recipe to his success, right? If I know my guy, I think he's going to be able to talk candidly about his strengths and his weaknesses. Let's see, man. Let's see if we can get Kelly on the phone. Marcus, please. Kelly was a monster, though.
Yeah.
Kelly was a fucking... Yo, Kelly was a polished player at 12 years old. And mind you, we didn't come up in the Steph Curry era. Niggas wasn't shooting like that. Kelly, who taught you to come off the screen and shoot at 12 years old, man? Like, what are you doing, son?
Tell you, man. Kelly was a beast, man.
Kelly was a monster, son. Coming off the screen. Yo, he better answer. Kels, where you at?
Here.
Kelly George, this is William Holly of the WBH Radio Podcast. How are you, sir?
Doing good, brother. Doing good, man.
All right, we live on air, son, so we getting straight to it. I got my man Fent with me, son. Say what up.
What's good, Kelly, man? How you do?
Oh, Fent, man. Oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be back down in the A next month, actually.
Yo, Kels, listen, man. We getting straight to it, man. We live on the air. They don't want to hear that fucking jump up shit. Kelly.
Okay.
Kelly.
Yo.
First off, how nervous are you about not knowing what I want to talk to you about?
Highly. One word.
But listen, though, we talking about a subject you should be well versed in, and that is the subject of Kelly George, man. How does that sound?
Boom. I think I know myself pretty well.
Yo, Kels, listen. I know you to be a gracious and humble young man, and you're a family man now. You got a house. You married, kids. But we're gonna put all that shit to the side for a minute. All right.
Cool.
We just a bunch of fellas talking our shit. Now, Kelly, I know life has taken you on a different path, but I'm talking about when you were playing ball. I'm talking about St. Vincent's Church team, My 11 Junior High School, Nazareth High School. You were one of the toughest and best players for your age group all of those years. Is that correct?
Facts.
Kelly, what do you think was the reason for your success?
I could really kind of put that behind my pops. You know, he was always pushing, you know, the disciplinary parent, you know, kept to sleep late. You got to wake up on a Saturday morning, you know, by 7:30, 8 o'clock, get everything done. But the same kind of focus and determination towards playing basketball. So all of that just followed through.
Right. So would you say he was always pushing you to be better?
Of course.
Okay. So talk to me about your game. What would you say was some of your strengths?
I'd say the fact that I was a left-handed player. I mean, it sounds the same like everybody else, but people can never really tell that I was a left-handed player until I took a couple of shots, because they would always see me dribbling with the right and making moves, and everything just seemed so...
Yo, Kelly, stop playing with me, son. Tell the world you was a fucking shooter, son. I was just telling people that you was 12 years old coming off screens like a polished, you pro jump shot 12 years old.
Yeah, like that right there, I love, like a Klay Thompson. I'd like to,
like we, you was doing that before shoot. That shooting shit was popping. Like, you was getting it popping. Now, I want to ask you this, though. Mm-hmm. What were some weaknesses to your game?
Defense. I'd say, you know, guarding, you know, like a guard that's pretty well versed with, you know, in his handling skills and all of that. Yeah, it's just been an issue. You know, the coach would always say, just watch the weight. But it's just defense.
Okay. Because, Kelly, I'm in this doctorate program, and I have to do some research. And the research that I want to do is surrounded around, I believe, players that maximize their potential are players that are self-aware. Players who have no problem looking in the mirror and being honest about their strengths and weaknesses, right? I believe that gives them the ability to constantly reinvent themselves and continue to get better outside the game, like in the practice arena, and even in a game. And I believe you were one of those players throughout your career who, you know, we never had to tiptoe around you. We could be honest with you. Like, yo, Kels, I like that. Or, Kels, you got to be better in this area. Coaches can talk to you. Like, you just sat there and spoke candidly about your deficiencies. You didn't squirm. You didn't this and that. And I believe that's the recipe to success. What do you make of that stance? Like, how far off am I with that?
Yeah, that's pretty much a fact. You got to know your weaknesses to go ahead and, you know, work on it. With me, it was like definitely, you know, as I said, defense, but that's pretty much my overall weakness. But from early on, you know, I did realize like my jump shot, it wasn't really where I needed to be, because nobody really seen the other guys I was playing with, the guys that I was playing with. Can't think of a word right now, but well, organized basketball,
yeah.
Those guys were some real like top New York, top United States players. So, I mean, the way they were shooting was out of this world. So what people were seeing from me, and they're thinking, that's great. I'm like,
yeah.
I always felt kind of funny about it, you know, so I was always kind of going to work on that. But that's a fact, bro.
So, you know, I'm sure you know guys who you could never talk to them about a weakness in their game, right? They kind of had a blind spot. And I believe when you have that, those players, they plateau, right? They'll never get all that is out there for them. What do you make of that?
Yeah, because they just continuously just work on the good things in their game, you know, and let the bad things just pretty much just stay there. They try to overshadow.
Right.
The bad stuff with everything good. Like, I look at Ben Simmons, you know, and that jump shot thing is really killing me. It's like, bro, go in the gym. I mean, what else you got to do?
Right. And lastly, Kels, my one last thing. Like, when I went into a game, all I ever thought about was losing. Like, I never was like, yo, we no chance we gonna lose. Like, nah, that if I don't do X, Y, Z, niggas about to embarrass me in front of my mama. So what was just stay going? Now, of course, yeah, if we handle business, we're going to win. But I always thought about the negatives. Like, how were you in that perspective going into a game?
Well, me, I'd say I was the opposite. Mm-hmm. I always felt we was going to win and win by far.
Right.
I mean, you know, it may have been different once the game started and everything, but I just always felt, you know, whatever team I was on, we were going to do good. We were going to win.
Right.
And then also growing up and playing organized basketball with St. Vincent, I mean, we ran the table for years, so
yeah.
Losing wasn't really in my vocabulary.
Copy. All right, brother. I'm going to hit you up later, man.
Yo, I'll see you Memorial weekend, man.
Yeah, fun time, man. We going to do it up.
Yeah, man.
Later.
All right, bless.
That's 90s All-Star, Mr. Kelly George. So we'll see, man. That's what my research is going to look like. I don't know how I'm going to prove it or who's going to be my test case or what, but... we figure it out, man. I'm almost done here, fam. Oh, matter of fact, tonight, NFL draft.
I don't want to talk about it.
I don't want to talk about it either because I don't know what the hell is going on. I don't know shit about an offensive lineman from Mississippi Valley State. I don't know a goddamn thing. But you know what? I'm starting to realize half the motherfuckers making decisions don't know either. Huh?
They definitely don't.
They definitely don't know, but they sit there and they parade around. There's nonstop draft coverage day in, day out, hours upon hours upon hours. At the end of that shit, they should just say, yo, we let Tom Brady go in the sixth round. We don't know shit.
I think Russ went in the fifth, Russell Wilson.
Joe Montana went in the third round. Yo, we don't know shit, right? And I picked up a book recently about the Patriots because I'm trying to see how these motherfuckers stay on top. And I was surprised to learn what Belichick believes is the first order of business when you take over an organization. You want to take a guess, fam? Take a guess, man. Go for it. Take a guess. Take a wild stab at it.
I'm lost. I don't think it has anything to do with actual X's and O's. It's an organizational thing.
His first order of business is writing the scouting manual, writing out exactly what he's looking for from every single position. So when he sends his guys out to these combines, to these schools, everybody's on the same page. It's not just go get me a good tight end. He has a specific description. Let me read this from this book.
What book is that?
This is Belichick and Brady by Michael Holly. No relation.
What to say?
This is, I'm thinking he's like, yo, just go get me a monster tight end. But this is what he wrote in the scouting.
He got two of them, though.
He wrote in the scouting report. A tight end for the New England Patriots must have good functional football intelligence. He must learn to run offense like a lineman, and he must learn to pass offense like a receiver. He must have the toughness to block a DN one-on-one. He must have good quickness. Most of his game is played against linebackers in a short area. He must play with suddenness, getting off the line, getting in and out of cuts, getting open quickly, and getting into blocks to secure edge. I was shocked that much detail went into a position. So that's why guys go to New England and they just rise above what they did at other teams. Because he's looking at specific talents and he's doing his best to highlight those talents. And it makes sense why they are running circles around the leagues. Because I promise you, I'm for sure, no other team is doing that. These guys know exactly what they're looking for. Everybody's on the same page. You got these franchises who, yo, I need a quarterback this year. Snap, let's get another quarterback next year.
Speaking of that, look at what the Arizona Cardinals just did. They drafted a quarterback number one after drafting a quarterback number one last year.
If everything is not in line, you cannot be successful. He had a description for a tight end. They knew exactly what they wanted when they went and grabbed Gronk. They knew exactly what they wanted when they went and grabbed Aaron Hernandez. Right? It's not just, yo, go get me a talent. And another thing with the draft, also in the book, people make fun of Bill Belichick at times because they say, oh, he's never really done anything early on in the draft. But you got to understand with Belichick, what he's looking for is value above all else. He just wants valuable pieces. So, okay, he never really made a big splash. He got Brady in the sixth round, Gronk in the second. But one thing he's never done, he's never really had a monster bust. You look at organizations like the Washington Redskins, they mortgage their whole future to go get RG3. That cripples your franchise for years. Belichick doesn't do that. Oftentimes, he trades out of the first round. Like, nah, nah, nah. If nothing is there, that's worth it, I don't want it. So not just talent, he wants value for that position. We all got an article of clothing in our closet that we paid pennies for, but we love it. And part of the reason we love it is because we got value out of it. And that's what the Patriots are doing. That's why they never signed those free agent contracts, mega deals. Because those things are like brand new cars. They diminish as soon as you get off the lot. You see, a few years ago, the freaking Baltimore Ravens, Joe Flacco wins the Super Bowl. All right, that's cool. That's when he was playing under that certain contract. After the Super Bowl, they gave him everything. They ain't been back since. Because that player that was cool under the previous contract, he's no longer cool at this mega deal. Lost value. So the moral of the story, the Patriots going to continue to fucking bust y'all head open.
Oof, unlike the Giants. Sad, sad Giants, man. I'm over football, man, after they traded Odell. And they drafted, oof, I don't want to talk about it. What we got?
It's about a wrap here, man.
I thought you had...
What you got for me? Yo, let me tell you, Fenn be executive producing the show. Like, he sends me every topic off ESPN. Like, yo, Will, let's cover this. Will, let's cover this. Like, yo, Fenn, first off, this is not a news reporting agency. If you're looking for your news from WBH Radio, that's sad, man. I ain't breaking any news over here, motherfucker. And also, what I'm trying to do on the podcast, I'm trying to do things that will kind of stand for a certain amount of time, right? Because I can't give it to you every day. This ain't PTI. This is all. Try to do broader topics. Fence sent me. He was like, yo, Luke Walton, he got a sexual assault case. I'm like, yo, I don't know what to do with that. You know what? WBH Radio official stance on Luke Walton being sued for sexual assault. Don't rape women.
Sound like a Luke Walton problem.
And we don't know all the facts. So Luke Walton deserves his day in court. Official stance for WBH Radio on the Luke Walton situation. But yo, Fent, I appreciate you, man. You didn't piss me off too much today. This is WPH Radio. I'm your host, William Holly. We out.